This week on A to Z Running, we interview Liz Fanco, who shares about how she helps other runners transform themselves through the sport of running and racing.
We answer a listener question about the best order of runs or workouts in a week.
In the world of running, if you were making predictions a year ago about certain NCAA runners' futures, chances are you would be wrong. We'll share why.
High school runners are unhinged, and it's a little disturbing.
And Ingebrigtsen is back in the news saying crazy things. You won't guess what this time.
All this and more on A to Z Running.
Welcome back to A to Z Running, where we help runners thrive with inspiration, information, and coaching and training services. I'm Andy.
And I am Zach, and you can learn everything about that stuff at atozrunning.com or on our most common social places, social digital places, and they are Instagram, YouTube, and Spotify.
So Robert reached out after our last episode because I was inquiring about great routes from city centers. And he is going to be able to offer me some help with that. If you are able to help me from the city that you live in or a place that you've run in a lot, I would love to gather more information, more routes, so that I can make something that is useful for all of you.
How cool would it be to have like all the major cities in the world best running routes?
That just made me a little nervous because that's going to be a lot. But I'll take as many as people offer me.
That won't happen. Also, I'm not entirely sure it's actually a great idea for something like that to be published like too publicly, because there's a whole lot of bad actors out there who are going to be like, oh, look at that. Now I know where all of these people are who are, you know, on foot by themselves.
Well, the more people would be there, right?
Well, that's potentially be alone. The case.
Okay,
I sure hope so.
I'm like second guessing all of it. I was like so excited, and you're like,
No, because I highly doubt that anyone listening to this podcast is a bad actor. Because let's face it, all of you people, you're wonderful.
They are wonderful.
Look at that.
Definitely.
That's the wrong word. I salvaged an otherwise pessimistic comment. Good. I'm not only pessimistic all the time.
Okay, good. Well, let's get started with your questions. We love to get your questions on the A to Z Running podcast. Make sure you email us at questions@atozrunning.com. That is the email. You can also find us other places as well and ask your questions in places that we're at, like Zach mentioned earlier, Spotify, Instagram, and so forth. This question is from Laura, and she asks, does the sequence of my runs in the week matter?
No. Wait, what's the context?
So I'm going to say yes and no. And the reason
you can't say yes and no.
Okay. So Laura is in conditioning. So she does have workouts. It's not in building where they're all the same. All the runs are the same.
Well, they're still not all the same because they're different distances.
Right. I know. But what I'm saying is that there is more variety in her stimulus. And so she knows, though, like there's a lot that Laura knows intuitively about her workouts. She's mainly concerned with knowing if she can flip things around when her schedule allows for certain runs on certain days.
Ah, okay. So the question is, does it matter in the context of if I need to make adjustments, can I just flip-flop things randomly and not have to pay too close attention to it? Okay. So you said yes and no. Why yes?
Well, okay. So yes, you would want to pay attention. And Laura actually already knows this. But you want to be fully rested and recovered before you do another hard effort. So spreading out your hard efforts and your long run for good recovery is very important. I'd say it's paramount because you're going to put a lot of effort in and you want to get the adaptations and you need to have some recovery after those efforts in order to get the benefit of your work. So that's why I say yes, but no in the sense of if you are, like, let's say you have a tempo or steady on a Monday, and on Wednesday you have a fartlek, and you do the fartlek on Monday and the steady on Wednesday, that would likely be okay.
Sure. Yeah, I think when we take a general approach to these kinds of things, runners, when I say we, I mean runners, that is usually kind of like the fundamental guiding principle for what to do day to day in training. And it is every other day is like easy and hard, and every other day is like long and short. And so if your hard efforts are shorter efforts, then your easy efforts are longer, and you go every other day. If your hard efforts are longer efforts, your easy efforts are shorter, and you still go every other day. And so fundamentally, the thing you have to get right as a runner is just making sure you're not accidentally doing all of a kind in a row, as Andy was saying. You don't want to do all of your hard efforts in a row and then all of your easy efforts in a row. That fundamentally is bad physiology, bad for your physiology. It's just, you can get through it. It just, you know, isn't healthy, risks injury, and generally means lower adaptations or poorer adaptations as a result.
Right. So not getting as much from your work, like I was saying. And I think part of the conversation there too, and this is not Laura's, this is not something that Laura necessarily struggles with. She's become very intuitive in her runs, but some people that are listening, that's why we say that you do need to take the effort seriously. So like when you do have an easy run on the schedule, you're not making that harder effort than it should be, because then that is getting the order messed up, because now you have a couple harder days in a row and you're not getting all your adaptations.
Yeah. And there is so much nuance here. So like in the context of the question, it also depends on where you are in a training cycle, because there are certain things order wise that are going to matter more at different points in time. For instance, if you're doing specific race preparation, which we tend to suggest you reserve for the final 6 to 8 weeks of training, if not even later. But if you're doing specific race preparation, then it would potentially matter because of where you're doing some longer, where you're doing some shorter, and how often you're doing near race efforts versus short, like bursts of intensity, things like that. Anyway, there, yeah, it could matter, which is why Andy said yes and no. But use the guiding principle and you'll be fine. Go every other day, hard and easy, long and short.
All right. Thank you for the question, Laura. Now let's get on to the main topic. I'm thrilled to welcome on the show Liz Fanco. She's a runner, triathlete, sweeper pacer, and coach. Fanco's journey has been remarkable. In fact, it's had national attention. I'll let her talk a little bit about that. Personally, she's been an encouragement to me, and she's reached out quite often about this podcast and had a lot of interaction with us. And so it's been really cool to watch Liz's journey unfold and the encouragement she's been in other people's journeys too. Let's get talking to Liz.
Liz, welcome to the A to Z Running Podcast. It's been a long time coming because we've known each other for a while now, and I am so inspired by your story and how you live out your life in the running community. I am so thankful for you. And I just want to call you Liz Sunshine and Fanco, because you bring sunshine everywhere you go. You bring light and warmth. So I am so excited for you to share that warmth and light here on the A to Z Running Podcast for our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. And yes, this conversation has been long overdue. You actually interviewed me for the podcast once way back in 2020 at Robinette's, the Run for Orphans that was happening. And we met there and had a little conversation there. But it's nice to have a long conversation with you as opposed to just kind of in passing at races.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you're somewhat of a celebrity. Well, not just somewhat, you are a celebrity, a national celebrity. You are on the Today Show, and I'd love for you to talk our audience through the reason for that and what you shared on the Today Show.
It feels weird to be a celebrity. So back in 2018, a couple of my kids asked if I would run half marathon with them with Team World Vision. They're the number one provider of clean water in the world. And a couple of my kids really felt called to join our local church's team and run that. I'd never run a mile before. I couldn't run at all. I'd never done anything athletic before, but I said yes, because my kids asked me to. Ended up, you know, I did my first half marathon that year. It took me well over 4 hours. It was not pretty, but I got it done. That ended up inspiring the rest of our family to join in. My husband and I have 8 children. We started doing half marathons as a family. And then in 2020, well, it got deferred to 2021 because of COVID, I signed up to run the New York City Marathon. And that has a time limit. So I realized that I needed to not necessarily learned to love running, but I needed to hate running less. And at that point, I had been morbidly obese my whole life. Running was really something I couldn't do for more than like 30 seconds at a time. And I was still doing all these races, half marathons, and but my time wasn't getting any faster. And so I actually got in touch with the sports performance lab that used to be at Mary Freebed, worked with a coach through there, worked on the Alter G treadmill. And throughout 2021, I ended up dropping about 120 pounds. Learned not only to hate running less, but to actually love running, to look forward to running. I did run the New York City Marathon that year. Did not love that marathon. Swore I would never run a marathon again. But I loved running and wanted to continue it. So I was on the Today Show just talking about my personal health journey, kind of where it started, where it ended, and just everything that was involved in that. But really, from there, my story has kind of continued on, and it's cool to get to share kind of the what's next of that story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it certainly did not conclude there with that amazing story that you shared, which was huge and wonderful and would be a great pinnacle, but you continued on. And I feel really strongly, you know, our mission at A to Z Running is helping runners thrive, and you thrive. And so I am excited to have you on the show to talk a little bit about that too. So what has thriving looked like for you, Liz?
For me, thriving has been coming to the realization that it's not about a number. It's not about a time on the time clock. It's not about, you know, continually getting faster and faster and better and better and moving up on the podium. It's about loving what I do and loving the people that I do it with. For me, I love to race. I work race staff for several different organizations in Grand Rapids. I'm the packet pickup coordinator for most of them. I get to see people. It's like a family reunion. Every single time there's a race, I get to give them their packet. I get to answer questions from new people. But for my personal journey, thriving has looked like accepting the fact that I love to race and kind of leaning into that. So some people call it crazy. I've raced at this point, we're early March, and I've raced 10 races so far in 2024. In 2023, I raced 64 races, including 5 marathons, 13 half marathons, 21 triathlons. And I did 61 races the year before that. And it's, I love it. It's, for me, it's my me time. It's energizing. And it hasn't been, like I said, it hasn't been about trying to chase that next PR or trying to podium. It's been about taking on new challenges. Like I said, after New York, I swore I'd never do another marathon, full marathon again. I already have 2 under my belt this year. I had 5 last year. I had several the year before that. So I'm up to 12 and I'm signed up for 7 more this year. I took on my first half Ironman distance triathlon last year. And I'm taking on my first full distance 140.6 this year. So just tackling new distances, new events, going to new places, going with groups of girlfriends. We just got back from Tennessee this past weekend. A group of us went down to run the Chattanooga Marathon. 9 of us went down to Alabama in the end of January, and we ran the Big Beach Marathon. Going to Kansas this year, going to Cowtown next year. Looking at the Four Corners Marathons in December, where you get to run 4 marathons in 4 days and cross 4 states off your list. And just leaning into that and loving that. And another cool thing, I qualified for Team USA this year. I had to wear my Team USA jacket. I'm not going to be able to go compete just for financial reasons in Australia. But I qualified in 5 different events. And that to me is so cool to say, you know, I've gotten to the point that I love this and I'm doing it well enough that I get a spot to represent my country in races if I want to. That to me is thriving for me. But beyond that, and it's going to kind of sound like a suck up, but my definition of thriving actually Zach put so well into words a couple weeks ago that I have to reread his quote because it's the background on my phone. A few weeks ago when Zach was talking about thriving, he said, "If at the end of the year, all I can say is I ran 2,000 miles and a 10-minute PR to qualify for the big race, then I'd say it wasn't worth the energy. But instead, if I can say I worked hard when it wasn't fun, encouraged others even when I was having a bad day, I helped a stranger across the finish line, devoted time and thought and prayer to the betterment of others, and celebrated other successes more than my own, then it is without question worth all that you do. And for me, in the past couple years, thriving has looked like leaning into other people. It has looked like starting run groups 4 days a week at 6 o'clock in the morning with all the people who have approached me over the past couple years and said, I also want to hate running less. Help me hate running less. And providing that space for people who want to get more comfortable with running. It's looked like being a race buddy to people or a tri buddy and saying, okay, if you want to do your first race, pick one and I will come do it alongside you. I'll help you from start to finish. I'll answer your questions. We'll train for it together. It's looked like it's been helping other people realize that they are capable of so much more than they thought they were and helping them along in their journeys. And to me, that's what thriving has looked like the past couple of years.
Oh, what a beautiful way to live. I just hear you talk about all your experiences, what you've been doing, how you've been giving back. It's a full, beautiful life that you've involved running in, that you've helped, like it serves you, you don't serve it. And that's, you know, another thing that we like to say a lot here too, is that you're allowing running to help you flourish, that it's not draining the well, that it's filling your cup. And I love to see that in what you've been doing, but also helping fill other people's cup. And you were talking about it a little bit there too, but can you tell us about how you volunteer in races? Like so, you do the packet pickup, but then also you do the pacing.
Yes. So I've been, this is my third year being a pacer in various races. And I, even when we went down to Alabama, I got to pace the Big Beach Marathon. And oftentimes I pace what's called, what's referred to as a sweeper pacer. A lot of races will have a limit of 6 hours or 6.5 hours just because they need to reopen streets. The sweeper pacer runs at the pace of the time limit. So in some places like Indy Monumental Marathon, the car is right behind us, right behind the sweeper team. We are the last people to cross the finish line before they pull up that timer mat and reopen the roads and the race is done. And so my job being out there is to keep as many people from falling behind me as I can. It's to be their encouragement, to kind of gather them along the way and keep them with me so that they can cross the finish line, accomplish that goal, get that medal, get that official time. And I've found that's something I really love to do is be a sweeper pacer. You get the best of the best at the back of the pack. People who just want to finish. And it's so cool to get to be a very small part of, you know, months and months of their training and to get to be there at the end for the good part, the part where they get to finish and accomplish that goal.
Yeah, that's super special. I think whenever you give that kind of energy and time to people, I think is a beautiful thing because it's so helpful. I think many of us can relate to the times when it feels dark and running is vulnerable because you get down to where you're most tired and you're getting down to the points where a lot of that self-doubt creeps in. And I think it's so important to have someone there to help you along the way, and especially you, like sunshine right there, like in those difficult, dark moments. So as far as like this level of support that you're giving to these athletes, have you heard anything from them about that experience as well?
I have. I'm friends with a lot of athletes on Facebook who we never met before I was their pacer. And some of my running friends were once my pacer. My good friend, Amy, she and I now pace races together. She was my pacer at my very first Riverbank run. And that was the first time I was tackling that 25K distance. And she's the one who helped me get across the finish line. And so she and I often sweep her pace together. But in terms of the level of support, it looks like you're an advocate for the slower runners with races. I reach out to race directors about keeping those aid stations open for the full amount of time, making sure that there's finish line food and medals and everything, that the race day experience looks the same for the people who it takes 6 hours as it does for the people who it takes 2.5 hours. And then out there on the course, I wear a Bluetooth speaker on my wrist. when I pace a 6 hour marathon, it's 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 intervals. When I pace a 6:30 marathon, it's 1-to-1 intervals. And everybody can hear the beeps. So they know when we're walking and when we're running. I have a playlist that I put on when people start to drag. So we've got, you know, music we can all dance to and sing to. We have some of my favorite run pictures are doing zombie drills. That I have everybody do every 3 miles that I got from you guys. Our finish line picture from Indy Monumental last year was the people that we were pacing all coming in doing zombie drills. Just because we did it every 3 miles, and that's now I'm the zombie drill pacer. Everybody associates that with me. It looks like helping people get out of their head. So much of running and training, you can try your best, but you don't know what race day is going to feel like. And the pressure is different on race day. So it's learning people's why, earlier on in the race when they're not dying yet, having those conversations about what inspired you to be out here today. What are you, you know, who is this for, or what is your goal, and learning their whys so that those miles where they're hitting the wall and in their head, that I can remind them of that why, which is really cool. It looks like reminding them that, you know, when the intervals go off, okay, you don't have to run the last 7 miles of this race. Like, I know you don't have energy to run 7 more miles, but you can run 1 minute right now. And I tell people you can do anything for a minute other than hold your breath underwater. So we're just focusing on that next minute of running before you get back to the minute of walking. And then I'm also, people refer to me as the course mom many times, because there's a lot of things when it's a first time marathoner that they don't think about. Nutrition is totally different when you're out there for 6 hours than it is when you're out for a 2 or 3 hour long run. Things like, I carry Body Glide with me. I carry Band-Aids. I carry ChapStick. So many things that people might not think about having with them for that first race that can really affect their race day experience. I carry those things with me for when people need them. I do the reminders every 45 minutes for nutrition, and just kind of the mother hen guiding them through the race, so that as they become more experienced in running, they can remember, oh, I needed to have, you know, ChapStick with me, or I needed to make sure I put a Compeed patch in my race belt just in case I got a blister or whatever it was. So kind of teaching as part of the marathon, so that their race day is not ruined by that blister that opens up, or that chafing that they get under their arm, or whatever, helping people learn and work through those things. And it's really just, it's helping people from start to finish. It's helping them take those months of training and culminate in that finish line, that medal, for whatever reason. People who are towards the back of the pack are generally not going for a PR. They're going for a finish. And it's so cool to, I always end up tearing up watching so many of these people that I've gotten to know over a 6 hour time period cross that finish line and get that finish. And it's, to me, that's the most rewarding part about being a sweeper, is all these people who at times in the race didn't know if they could do it. And then watching them do it is just so cool.
Liz, I think you're going to have every race and every person reaching out and being like, hey, can you teach me how to race? Like, if anyone's doing their first marathon, they should definitely be reaching out to you and like asking if you're going to be there to do the pacing, because that's phenomenal. What a cool thing. Like, and something I don't hear of anyone really doing, you know, because that's another level. That's not just like, and it's already a big sacrifice to be a pacer. But in addition to that, like, I'm going to teach you about nutrition. I'm going to have these things prepared for you so that, you know, next time, like, you're going to need this, but I have it for you today so you can have less than a miserable experience. So, wow, how cool is that? And how awesome for all of those athletes to have that experience with you. So cool, Liz. That's awesome.
We really do have a lot of fun. We always say it's the party at the back, but we have a blast back there. And I would love to see more races add sweeper pacers. And I'm always advocating for that. Some races like Chicago that have a 6.5 hour time limit, their slowest pacer is 5 hours. And I'm like, what about those other people? The hour and a half for the people, they're the ones who need it the most, in terms of that support just to get across the finish line. And so I'm a big advocate, for races to add sweeper pacers, just to have somebody back there to provide that extra support. But definitely I will be at Chicago this year again, doing a 6.5 hour, even though it's not official, I won't have an official pacer jersey. I put it out there to like 40 something people last year that I ended up with a group, that I would be the 6.5 hour pacer and out there just chugging along, helping people get across that finish line. And there are other races coming up that I'm hoping to pace as well.
That is really great. And I think that's amazing that you're putting it out there too, because I think that one of the things that holds us back from doing things that scare us is, you know, the fear of doing it alone. And so mm-hmm. if we can eliminate that barrier, I think that that is going to free people up to try this new thing if it is new for them. And having you be part of that is such a great way to break down those walls of fear and enter into something new. That's very cool. So I have a last question. I feel like, you know, I said this to you, Liz, before we started chatting. I could talk to you for hours on this podcast and our audience would be enthralled. But I do have one last question for today. When you think of the word transformative, what does that mean to you in the context of running?
To me, it's what I refer to as the finish line mentality. And it's something that I experienced back in 2018. And I experienced it again when I did my first triathlon. I experienced it again when I did my 70.3 last year. And the finish line mentality is when you go from I could never to I just did, when you cross that finish line, your perspective completely changes. It's completely transformed because all of a sudden you start asking yourself, what else am I capable of that I have second guessed myself, that I have told myself, you know, the self-doubt creeps in. I've told myself that's not anything I could ever do. When you cross that finish line and realize you just did something that you said you would never be able to do, your perspective is shattered. You are completely changed in how you look at things. And that is really my goal. I started coaching this year as well. And that's my goal with athletes that I work with, is let's transform that perspective for you. Rather than saying, you know, that's something I could never do, let's tackle it. Let's put it on your schedule. Let's build up to that and let's get you across that finish line. And so for me, transformative in running really is that finish line mentality. It's when you cross the finish line and realize you just did something that you swore you would never be able to do. And whether it's a 5K, whether it's a half or full marathon, whether it's, you know, a super sprint length triathlon or a full distance Ironman, whatever it is, when you cross that finish line and realize you've been second guessing yourself, and that self-doubt has taken over, and all of a sudden you get to push past that. It's so cool, the transformation that takes place. And I love seeing that in athletes.
That's beautiful. I love that. What is one of your moments that, I mean, there's been many, but what has been one of your most memorable transformative moments?
Crossing the finish line of my first triathlon, but also the finish line of my 70.3 in December, because I swore I had to learn how to swim to do triathlons because I didn't really know how to swim. I hated biking. So to go from that to, I just finished a half Ironman distance race and it wasn't my best race. I actually had really bad cramps. It was super hot that day and I could not run a single step of the half marathon at the end of the 70.3. I walked Daytona International Speedway for 13.1 miles to get that. I couldn't run at all. But crossing the finish line of that race and being like, I spent decades of my life well over 300 pounds and would get winded walking up the stairs. And I just completed a half Ironman distance race, was just so emotionally overwhelming for me. almost as emotionally overwhelming as my first 5K that I got under 45 minutes. Like that was back in 2021. That was my goal, was to get my 5K time under 45 minutes. And I remember crying at the end of that because I was so overwhelmed. I think I got it in 41 minutes. And the power of, oh my goodness, I just accomplished something huge. That feeling. And then when I left Daytona, I'm like, okay, full distance Ironman, let's go. I could do that next year. So I signed up for Michigan Titanium this year to do the full distance. But it's just as powerful, like I said, as someone crossing a 5K for the first time, somebody crossing a half marathon for the first time, whatever that is, or running a mile. I've met so many people, and I coached some people who had contacted me and said, I could never run the mile in gym class. My goal is to run a mile. And when they run a mile without stopping for the first time, that feeling of, okay, anything is possible now. I just ran a mile. And I remember crying when I ran my first mile. It's really, really impactful. And it's very freeing for it not to be about, I have to be at the front, I have to be at the best, I have to hit these times, I have to do this, this, and this. But instead to just say, I want to see what I can accomplish. I want to see what I can finish. I want to see what new challenges I can take on and take off the stress of having to be perfect or, you know, the best I can possibly be at something, and just saying, let's see what I'm capable of. I love that.
That is so deep and on many levels. In fact, I have another follow-up question to that, which is, okay, how does all of this translate and surpass, transcend running for you?
I feel like I'm doing right now what God created me to do. God has given me the ability to encourage others and to inspire others. And when I asked some of the girls in my running group about, I gave them the questions ahead of time, like, okay, this is what I'm going to talk about. What do you think? And over again, they're like, you inspire others to do things they never thought that they could do. And you make yourself available. You're there for us. You help us from start to finish. And this is what I love to do. It's, some people would think that racing 64 weekends out of, or 64 times a year, which is more than once a weekend, would be insanely draining. And it's so energizing for me. And, they kind of say that you found where you're supposed to be, where you're energized by what you're doing. And I am so energized by this. I love going to races. I love sweeper pacing. I love helping people every step of the way. And I feel like I've finally found what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. And it's really cool to kind of sit in the middle of that and see what's been growing out of that. The coaching, the racing, the working on race staff for different races. There's a new program this year that Tries for Health is doing with their races. The Tri Buddy program, where you can sign up to have somebody do a triathlon alongside you. And that was inspired by, I did a try alongside the person who's in charge of the program for her first triathlon. And she's like, you inspired a program. We're going to add it for everybody else now. And I love that. I'm so energized by this. And I feel like this is what God gave me a gift to do, and where I'm where I'm supposed to be now. And I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And I just love that.
Well, Liz, we are energized by you. I know our listeners are too. Thank you, Liz, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Liz, for coming on the show and for spreading your sunshine and your encouragement with all of us. We really appreciate it. If you want to get into contact with Liz and you want a robust list of races she'll be at as a sweeper pacer, I am going to post it on our Facebook page when I have that, but also you can reach out to her directly, and you can reach out to her for her run groups too if you're in the area as well, and that's haterunninglessclub@gmail.com. Don't you love that? That's awesome. haterunninglessclub@gmail.com. That's how you can get into contact with Liz.
Thank you so much, Liz. Appreciate your time and your inspiration, both in our conversation and at large in the sport. Much appreciated. Now let's get on to the world of running.
Shout out to some A to Z runners who did a new event called the White Pine Thaw Marathon Relay. And we had quite a few. I don't have all their names listed here, but...
Because it's a relay.
It's a relay.
You don't see individual results.
Major shout out to Ben, who is our athlete, who is the race director, and his wife, Sarah, who's our athlete as well. So really cool. Sold out race. Awesome showing.
Very fun. Well, thanks for putting that on, Ben and Sarah and company. And congrats to everybody who competed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of competition, let's talk about NCAA Indoor Track and Field Championships. We're going to tackle this one a little bit differently than normal. Usually, we just like go event by event in some of these things because it's just there's so much to talk about. Here, to try to condense that a bit, because we have so many other things as well to address today, we're going to just try to touch on some of the key highlights and achievements,
mm-hmm.
and specifically the people involved in those.
These are names to watch or to listen for.
Certainly that. Now, we began in our introduction, Andy teased you a bit. She's such a tease in the teaser. She teased you a bit about the likely misconceptions that so many people had. And here's how I want to capture that. Basically, about a year ago, and it was last year around indoors time, up to that moment and including during that moment, a lot of people were starting to make what they like to call bold predictions. They're never bold, and they're always pessimistic. But anyway, bold predictions about certain key NCAA runners. And among them, ones we've talked about, Parker Valby being one, Nico Young being another, and certainly others. But both of those two especially as highly esteemed and anticipated athletes who didn't seem to be rising to expectation. And people are starting to say, these two, maybe they're just never going to quite do it. They're just always going to be great, but just, you know, not quite, you know, not winning the titles, all that kind of stuff. Well, since people started saying that, for one, Parker Valby has not yet lost a title. That's right. Since that time, NCAA indoors last year, when Caitlin Toohey swept the races, now Parker Valby has yet to lose an NCAA championship. And that wow. is incredible. It's so incredible, in fact, that it mirrors what Caitlin Toohey did in the exact same time span a year ago, which is fascinating.
Except faster.
As it were, except faster. And here's how it goes. So in the NCAA indoor track and field, they compete in both the 5,000 and the 3,000 meters on the track, which is lots of fun. And you've got miles and 800s and things like that. Parker Valby ran the double and won them both in insane performances.
Yeah, it wasn't even close.
Well, in the 5,000, it literally wasn't even close. She won by 22 seconds.
Yeah, so Valby ran fast and got the collegiate record, winning by 22 seconds, and she was leading the whole time. She did all the work, wire to wire.
Her own collegiate record that she broke earlier this year. She is now the only, she remains the only NCAA runner to run under 15 minutes in the 5,000 indoors, and she's done it twice.
And she has, in interviews, been like kind of like shrugging about it because like she's like, that's not, she doesn't think it represents her potential. And she's like, I won't say that it was easy, but it was kind of easy, essentially.
It's all staged.
I don't know.
Parker Valby is an act. She is herself an act of herself and or of her own volition. But point being, she's putting on a show. And you can tell because every once in a while it cracks a little. And her actual personality is so different from this act that she's always putting on. But as it were, she was definitely in full character in indoor championships. No cracks this time. Putting on the show. So that included fast times. We mentioned the record. It was 14:52. She ran 14:52.
Soloing.
Indoor track.
Soloing.
By herself. And then the next day came back and won the 3,000 meters in a championship record, NCAA championship record. So she set two championship records in one weekend, winning two titles that are her third and fourth NCAA individual titles as well.
Wow.
What a span she is
having.
Seriously.
And like Zach said, like a year ago around this time, she didn't even have a title yet. I mean, she won cross country after.
Yeah.
After. So
she won outdoor 5,000 last year, cross country, and now two indoor races to mark four in a row. She now has been undefeated at the NCAA championships for almost a calendar year. Okay. Well, she's not the only one who had a good weekend in the distance races. Remember Nico Young? And everyone was saying, Nico Young, you know, what's he going to do? He's just, he was so highly anticipated as a high school standout. And everyone was like, this guy's going to rock the NCAA. And he's been good, but not much more than good. And then he ran 12:57 in the 5,000 a few weeks ago, set a new collegiate record that Graham Blanks, the Harvard guy, set earlier this year. So he just broke it again in savage fashion. And everyone's like, whoa, where did that come from? But then people still kept saying, because the haters got to hate, they still kept saying, well, Young, he can run fast, but he can't win races, championship races. And that up till this weekend had been true. And then he showed that runners can grow and develop and progress, even if they are already excellent, by taking home two titles in one weekend, back-to-back days.
Just like Velby.
And now, having gone from zero to two titles in a single weekend, hopefully the haters are going home, as they say, devastated. But
remember when Caitlin Tui went to college and people were saying the same thing about her? It took her a little bit to get on her
feet. It didn't take her very long.
There were Caitlin Tui haters. There's always haters. And then she ended up knocking the socks off people. And it just takes a while to, a lot in your life changes from high school to college. Everything changes. You're getting a new coach. You're living in a new place, most likely. And there's a lot of changes.
The weirdness around Tui actually is less to do with that, because a slow start in college running is par for the course. That's why schools redshirt even top tier freshmen, because it's just, you assume that people are going to have somewhat of a slow start. But what's odd for Tui is how she finished. Her end was a little bit strange, where she just didn't seem quite the same competitor that she had been for about a year. But as it were, that's aside, because she is out of the NCAA now. And running professionally, and she's going to hopefully have a great and glorious career. Nico Young, however, back to Young. Young, running for Northern Arizona University, did the thing that he had never been able to do up until now, which is demonstrate that he now can kick like a demon. And he finished these races in devastating fashion, and did so in different kinds of ways between the 5,000 and the 3,000 even. But what it amounts to is the guy runs a 1:54 for the last 800 in the 3,000. Like, that's crazy. That is very hard to do. But also continued accelerating for the last couple laps. Like, he's just, you know, crazy stuff like that, right? He sets a meet record in the 3,000 the day after winning the 5,000. So he takes the back-to-back title, scores 20 points for his team. NAU ends up with 31 points and finishes fourth as a team. 20 of those 31 points were just Nico Young. That's really something. By the way, Florida was on track to win the national title as a team.
For the women.
For the women. Parker Valby clearly, you know, making a dent on that. But they needed, at the 3,000 meter point, they needed six more points in addition to Parker Valby's 10 to be in the running for the title at the last event, which was the 4x4 relay. And Parker Valby's teammate, who was in the 3,000 meter final, dropped out. Oh, I'm not sure why, but bummer. She was leading the race actually early and then dropped out. So Florida did not win the women's title, but they did finish well, and a huge chunk of their points were Parker Valby as well. So that's that. By the way, on the men's side, Parker Wolf of UNC was best of the rest twice. And that's a tough place to be. Runner up two times in the same weekend.
He looked good.
Looked great. But this is where it comes down to. Nico Young never would have beat Parker Wolf in any of his previous self races. But Nico Young this time was a different racer, and he crushed Parker Wolf.
They had like a tiny little interview snippet, and if I were to speculate from the little thing he said, essentially he's like, I've run really fast. I'm just going to run really fast and I'll win. Like, essentially,
well, he did that, but he wasn't hardly any faster. Like, Parker Wolf was right on his tail much of the both races, and he only simply beat him by outkicking him.
Yeah. Well, there's a confidence there that he didn't have before.
Oh, yeah. For sure that. So now all the talk is, well, Nico Young, you know, is he going to be like now a world-class athlete and all that stuff? And I just think it's so funny. The pendulum swings, and now everyone's like, Nico Young's the next great hope of U.S. distance running. Okay, we'll see. And then there's Luke Hauser. Luke Hauser from Washington won the indoor mile last year. Washington wins all of the mile 1500s, it seems.
For the men.
For the men in the last couple of years. And it's not the same person all the time. So it's just been kind of crazy that it's like, you know, Joe Wascom won one, Luke Hauser won one. Joe Wascom made it to the world champs, by the way, for the U.S. last summer, if anyone recalls, finishing in the top three in the U.S. championships. But Wascom was in this final. He just didn't have a good race. Luke Hauser, however, defended his title successfully, which the last person to do that, do you know who it was?
I don't.
Josh Kerr.
Oh.
Yeah, right. And we all know what that has led to for him. So Josh Kerr, several years back, won 2 years in a row. Luke Hauser now just pulled it off as well. And here's the thing. This men's mile NCAA championship was the dumbest race I've ever seen by collegiate athletes.
It was really bad.
They were making the worst possible choices over and over. Like all of them.
They made the same bad
except
choice.
Except Luke Hauser. Everyone except Hauser the same bad choice. Here's what it is. Okay. So they're running on an indoor track, right? Which is tricky, much trickier than an outdoor track because your straightaways, which is when everyone wants to pass, are shorter. You have 50-meter straightaways. The curves are banked because they're too sharp to run on a flat at high speeds. And so it makes it just very tricky to pass on the curves as well. People are always bumping each other and falling and stuff just happens all the time. As a matter of fact, there was a fall in the last 75 meters of this very race. So just that kind of stuff is commonplace indoor track. So someone who does this more than ever knows that there are certain things you do and do not do in indoor track racing at high speeds, like a mile. And they did all the things you don't do. Like when I say they, I mean everyone except for Hauser did. So every straightaway, they would all go out wide to try to pass each other.
It was like all of them.
But it was all of them at the same time. So no one would pass anyone. It would shuffle around a little bit. They'd be all the way out into like lane three or four.
Four, Zach. Like it was four every
five
time.
Guys wide. And then they'd all shuffle back into line for the curve.
It was so weird.
And then they'd try it again on the next straightaway.
But not just, they would not even tuck in at the corners either.
Not all the way. Because there wasn't enough space.
There were people in that race, including, who was the guy from India? He's the national record holder for India.
Yeah.
I think he was in lane two or three, like the whole time.
The whole
time.
Race, for sure. And in lane three or four, a lot of the time.
Which is going to add to your time in a race like that. It's
yeah,
short.
He probably ran like an extra 100 meters. Not really, but. So that's bad.
And I'm not just picking on him. It was all of them. He was good talent that wasn't up in the front.
Well, he was touted as one of the possible favorites, having a strong indoor season, including setting the Indian national record in the mile. But as it were, Hauser was the only one who didn't do all of the shenanigans because
he's in front.
Early on, he decided, it was about halfway into the race, a little bit.
It's his fault. Before,
he decided to go straight to the front and then just stay there. And every time someone got up on his shoulder, he just held them off and never relinquished the lead. I think he ran by far the shortest race of anyone and did the least amount of work. And this is uncommon because when you're leading a race, everyone's like, it's the most amount of work because you are setting the pace and you're doing the work up front. No, they were all doing much, much more work behind him. So Hauser just led from the front and then just kept ratcheting it down from about 800 to go, especially from 600 to go, and no one could keep up with
him. He was so slow. That's why it was all bunched up.
Slow for the first half, yeah. And then just blisteringly fast for the second half. And he just did it, walked away with it. So there you go. That was the men's mile. But how about Maya Ramsden?
Yeah, Maya Ramsden was a queen out there. She looked good. She looked strong. And she came off of world champs last weekend. So all the travel that entails and all the stress and nervous system stuff, like that's incredible to have such good composure for a young athlete like this coming back and running another big race.
But my theory on that is part of what gave her so much confidence in this race. Is because she's showing up at the start line in the college championships, like, you know, hang on, let me rub the dust off my shoulders from a world championship, you know, race that I just did, and maybe I'll go easy on you all, you, you children. Now, she's not, of course, the only person to run in the world championships and then also come back and do things like this. Other athletes do that a fair bit in the NCAA. Point is, though, she ran like a champion.
Yeah.
And just owned and controlled the event. She won the 1500 outdoors last year, showed up here looking like the person to beat, and was the person to beat. And no one did. No one beat her. So not only did she win, she won fast in a new championship record, 4:25, 2 seconds off of Leah Fallon's championship record. Her name was not Fallon when she set the record, but Leah Fallon now held the record for 9 years.
Yeah, Leah.
That's something.
That is something.
But it was notable that fellow Kiwi, so Maya Ramsden is from New Zealand, and another Kiwi, Kimberly May, who runs for Providence, was in the race and finished third. And kind of a funny comment after the fact, she's like, yeah, you know, I've been racing against Ramsden since we were young teens. They're both juniors also, so they're very close together in age. Since we were young teens, and I've never beat her. It's like, oh, no, bummer. But, hey, top three is not bad either.
Definitely not. And that is amazing to me because their country, or it's not that big.
It is true, but they are excellent runners.
They
Why?
Are excellent
Why
runners.
Are they excellent runners? Because Arthur Lydiard was Kiwi, Andy.
I know.
He
I know this.
Created the world that is distance running lore in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And then he spread it around the rest of the world too. But it started there, and they've got a whole lot to say about good quality training.
Now on to the 800-meter run in the for the women. Juliette Whitaker upset Michaela Rose for this one. So last year, Juliette Whitaker was the runner-up. And she was runner-up to her teammate, Roisin Willis. And so it's nice to see. I always think it's nice to see someone who is runner-up then take the gold, take the championship title. Because it's a long time coming. You know, they've been searching hard for a long time.
Yeah, and Whitaker especially is an interesting case. We talked about Nico Young as, you know, one of the most anticipated high school runners in when he started in the NCAA. Whitaker, similarly for the 800, same kind of story. She was a sub 2 minute high school 800 meter runner, which is itself massive and successful at any level. And so then comes to the college scene and didn't really show much of that right away. She was always kind of fast, but not quite there. She finished second last year to her own teammate, who is also a high school standout, but not quite as fast as her in high school. And so then it was kind of like, oh, it stings a little bit because she was beating her more previously. But as it were, Whitaker still has not run faster than her high school PR either. So she's like, you could say she's coming into her collegiate potential still, which is kind of exciting. And so as a sophomore, winning her first title, not a bad place to be, running under 2 minutes in a race where two athletes ran under 2 minutes because Michaela Rose was not far behind. Whitaker outkicked her barely before the line. And so both of them running 1:59 and change, very impressive.
If you can run under 2 minutes in the 800, depending on how a championship race will unfold, you've got a chance to win. And I'm talking globally as well.
Yeah, especially indoors. It's very uncommon indoors to see under 2 minute performances, except for at the very highest level.
Yeah. Yep, that's very true. Now, something that's also interesting about this race is that there has never been two women who've gone under two in a race for the NCAAs. And in this race, there were two that were under 2 minutes. A little fun fact.
Solid stuff. So let's talk about other young people. High schoolers are just putting on a show right now. And I'm still not sure what exactly to think about it. So let's tell you what they did this weekend. And
then we'll all try to wrap our brains around it.
We'll try to think about it. So there were two key high school championship events. They don't have official indoor championships in the same way that they have like cross country and outdoor stuff. Because high schools don't even routinely do state championships in indoor track. Actually, indoor track isn't even technically a sport for most high schools.
Nope.
If not, you know, almost all states don't have it as a sport. So it's more kind of like a club event. But as it were, the upper echelon, especially of high school runners, tend to still all compete in a normal track season indoors in some sense. So you have the Nike Indoor Nationals and you have the New Balance Indoor Nationals. And what was especially interesting is the New Balance High School Nationals was held in the same venue as the NCAA Championships just the next day.
That's cool.
Like, it's a busy weekend for that venue. But I think that's actually awesome because then all these people who are here to watch the college runners are much more likely to stick around and watch the high school runners too. And high school national championships, like, nobody attends. It's just the parents of all the kids who are there. And it's not a super high participation event either. So there's just not that many people there compared to like a major track event. In this case, it allowed for even more people to be there incidentally, which I think is wonderful. Well, that being the case, kids were crazy. So at Nike, let's start there. At the Nike Indoor Nationals, Elizabeth Leachman just put on a show, which she's kind of just been doing. Remember, she is a sophomore.
Sophomore.
Remember as well, I mean, the sophomore, it's like all these fast sophomores right now for the girls. It's, I don't know what to think about that either. Sophomores and freshmen running so fast. Addie Ritzenhine, you know,
yeah,
like
I
so
know.
Many.
It's
all
amazing.
Right, so Leachman, remember she was the one doing the crazy stuff in the cross-country races and,
yeah.
and tanked hard and it didn't work out for her. But in this particular instance, recall that we were just talking about how for 3 weeks in a row, she ran faster than Caitlin Tui's 2 mile national record. She did it three times, 3 weeks in a row.
Yep.
And that just kind of speaks to some real capacity there. Well, as it were, Leachman had never run a 5,000 meters on the track before this weekend.
What a way to do it on an indoor track.
Right?
Sounds terrible.
So she did, and she ran 15:28.
That's so fast.
Anyone else want to debut on the track in 15:28?
Everyone.
All of us?
Anyone.
So that's what she did, and that's a new national record. That's that's a new national record by a lot, and as well would have been ninth at the NCAA championships if she was
wild.
In that race.
That's so wild.
She's like 15 years old.
Well, she wasn't the only one to run fast and to run the fastest for her age ever. Sophia Rodriguez broke the freshman class record in third in a time of 16:22.
There you go. So ninth grader running 16:22. And Leachman then went on to as well win the 2 mile, which I don't know exactly how much time was between the two. It wasn't a lot. She won the 2 mile in what amounts to the second fastest time ever, although the fastest, if you recall, is hers.
Hers, yeah. The fastest, like, fewer.
Hers. But this now means that in the last month, she's run four times. She has run faster than the previous national record in the 2 mile. So we'll just let that sink in for a moment. But 9:44, good enough to win. But what's crazy about that performance in particular is that she was not alone. And that was shocking. It was Jane Hedengren. Let's go with that. Finished in second place, number three performance ever in the 2 mile in 9:47.
Wow.
So there you go. Fast people helping other people run fast. Then at the New Balance Championships, people were kind of doing about the same thing. In particular, Daniel Simmons. For the boys, who you recall, he was one of the cross-country champions this year as well. Maybe I'm getting that backwards. But I think he was one of them. Nike Nationals. In any event, if he wasn't, what he just did was run 13:38 to chop 18 seconds off last year's national record indoor 5,000. And now, that's only, correct me if I'm wrong, 2 or 4 seconds slower than the outdoor national record.
Wow.
In the 5,000, which was just set last year as well by that super crazy senior class. That was insane. So Simmons has already demonstrated this year that he's among the best ever high school boys, and that just obliterated any previous bests by so much that it's a little bit shocking. A little bit shocking. Speaking of, Drew Griffith, who is the Foot Locker cross-country champion, also set a new 2 mile national record in 8:34. So you've got just basically a total reset of high school records this indoor season.
That's wild.
Complete and total reset.
Allie Zeeland and Isabel Allori both ran under 9:50 in the 2 mile for the girls. That's really amazing to have two in one race run that fast. Prior to this weekend, no girls race had seen more than one go under 9:50. So this is the first that there were two.
And it happened on two different occasions, because both the Nike race with Leachman and Hedengren and this race at New Balance. So you have four girls run under 9:50 in one weekend when prior to that, there's like a couple ever had done it.
That's wild.
So that's wild. And I don't know exactly what their times place them on the list, but both of them, that puts them like in the top six, I think, ever as well. So there you go. That was fast. But the individual stuff wasn't the only fast stuff going on. And this is just, you know, a nice way to cap it all off. Relays are fun. And Cuthbertson's girls had a lot of fun at New Balance Nationals. Specifically, they set new national records in the DMR when they won that, the 4x mile when they won that, and then they almost won the 4x8 later on. So three distance, you could say, or at least middle distance relays, and they just were plowing over everyone. How exciting. They're 4x1. Any guesses, Andy, what their 1 mile average time was between the four of them?
It had to be under 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Question is how much?
Because when I was in school, our high school girls had I wasn't part of the team. I wasn't part of the team. But there were women before me that I knew who had the record, and they averaged about, you know, just over 5 minutes, and they had the national record. And so now it's decreased to
4:51.
4:51.
But this is also the indoor record. I do not know what the outdoor record is, as it were. It might be faster than that as well, but 4:51 average. Crazy. Their fastest leg ran 4:41 for her mile time. So there you go. Cuthbertson's girls. That's a North Carolina school. That would be a lot of fun to be a part of that. Okay. We're gonna throw like a scattershot of random things at you.
We're almost done. Don't worry.
Because these are the non-results, race results, fascinating things. Although some of them might be race results too. But let's start with Ingebrigtsen. Ingebrigtsen is the most cringe interviewee in the running world. You always want to pre-cringe whenever you hear that he's been interviewed. What did he say this time? So, and there's something to do. There's an association with this kind of thing and people who are like reality TV stars. And then you add into that like high level athletes who think really highly of themselves, who also have this kind of flavor to them. And Ingebrigtsen's all of those things combined. And that's just a bad combination for people saying things that they shouldn't probably say. Well, anyway, you know Ingebrigtsen. He's set world records. He's one of the best milers of all time by far. What was his time? Number two or number three on the list. But anyway, that being the case, he always runs the 1500 at the World Championships and the Olympics, and he's always either first or second. And every once in a while wins the 5000 to, you know, get revenge when he loses the 1500, but clearly is, you know, among like the greats in those things, right? No doubt about it. In this interview with the UK Times, and guess what Ingebrigtsen said was his best event?
Well, I know, so I can't.
Because you're looking
guess.
At it.
No, I listened
you
to
saw
the thing.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. He says he's a half marathoner.
He's his best event. They say, what's your best event? What's your best event? Jakob, half marathon.
He's never run it, people.
Never run
it. He's never run it.
What is this guy doing? What is that about? Who does that? Okay, first of all, who does that?
Okay, so here's what he's doing. He's using the ramp up psychology so that when he actually goes to do a half marathon, he's going to get more attention because he had said that he's the best at the half marathon. He's going to get more publicity, which means more money. He is doing it as a strategy on purpose for marketing himself. I guarantee it.
I don't think he's that
thoughtful. Because now everyone's going to pay more attention.
I think he just thinks so highly of himself that someone says, hey, Jakob, do you think you'd ever do an Ironman? And he'd be like, nah, I just win it too easily. That's just the way he thinks about himself. He also had some really funny comments to say about people who are, you know, part of his inner circle and people who aren't part of his inner circle. And it's basically like, yeah, well, people who, you know, don't think like me, they're wrong. So I don't really let them in. Like, what? He's always got something to say. All right. Well, Josh Kerr gets under his skin a bit, and that's always entertaining too. So I'm looking forward to more of that, because you know there's going to be a lot of it in anticipation for the Summer Olympics this year.
Just to let you know, he did say that the 1500 was his fourth event.
Yeah. So. Not only did he say his half marathon is the best event, his next best event is the 10,000. And then after that is the 5,000. So he has won that a couple times.
I think
he's a good 5,000 meter runner. I mean, he's run one of the fastest times in history in that event as well. But anyway, Ingebrigtsen, what are you doing? Well, let's talk about Kipchoge, which is usually a really positive turn of the conversation, except for there apparently is now speculation that Kipchoge may not be a top candidate for Kenya's national team at the Olympics in the marathon. Because if you start to look at the stats and the numbers, in the last year, he has not performed superbly well, and a slew of other Kenyans have relative to Kipchoge's performances. And it starts to raise some concerns. So now people are speculating, well, first of all, Athletics Kenya already makes some really weird choices when they choose people for their national teams, and they're often questionable. But also, if they left off Kipchoge, he's like a national hero. So even if his performances weren't great, you would think they'd put him on the team, because he is good no matter what, and he's a national hero.
I thought he's a freebie because he won last Olympics.
That's not how that works because the team still decides whether or not they would let him go as a part of their team.
But wouldn't they get four then?
No. That's not how the Olympics doesn't guarantee you an extra spot from the last Olympics.
Previous champion gets.
I don't think so. Not from the last Olympics. That's 4 years before in a traditional Olympic cycle. I highly doubt that you get a guaranteed
entry. For the World Championships then.
For the World Championships, yes. But that might contribute. You might get guaranteed entries from the World Championship to the Olympics. But in any event, this is more a speculative exercise than a reality. Anyway, my point is, what's fascinating when you start to peel back the layers is you do get some really interesting things, like Benson Kipruto, for instance. Benson Kipruto, who just won the Tokyo Marathon, ran personal best 2:02 and change, number 5 all time. He has never lost to Kipchoge. Isn't that a crazy stat? They've raced each other in the marathon 3 times, and Kipruto has won each of them.
Wow.
Relative to Kipchoge. I don't know that he won each of those races, but he beat Kipchoge. That's quite the claim. Yeah. Like, yeah, Kipchoge, he's all right. I'm better. I beat him every time. Like, okay. Well, that's pretty cool. But, you know, there's plenty of reason to think that regardless of how others are doing, Kipchoge is a shoo-in for any national team currently still. Next Olympic cycle, if he's still running, I don't know. But right now, yeah, we'll see. Oh, by the way, Kipruto, after he won that Tokyo Marathon, it came out that his daughter was born 3 days before the race. And
wow.
It was quite time.
It's like, I gotta go make some money, pay for some diapers.
I guess so.
So Australian high schooler Claudia Hollingsworth just ran 158.8.
We were talking about fast people.
High schooler.
Doing fast things.
I mean, that's a contender to make an Olympic final.
Yeah. Yep, it is.
So high schooler?
I think it's actually the world leading time in outdoor track also.
Okay. Snap.
She's in high school. We've been talking about, there's two high school phenoms, Claudia Hollingsworth and then the boy, and I can never remember his name. We'll remind you, Cameron Myers, that's it. The two of them are just newsworthy. They're every time they race. It's pretty cool.
And this is sad. Why do you add this, Zach?
Because, this isn't the way you usually want to add. But it's interesting and sad.
Apparently, you can make more money just reaching the World Championships final in darts than you can winning 2 gold medals in track.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah, there's an article published about Josh Kerr. So he won indoor and outdoor last year, right? He won $70,000 for the outdoor championship gold medal and $40,000 for the indoor. And there was a whole lot of commentary about why indoor pays like almost nothing. It's like half, basically, which is crazy. So 110,000, right, by winning 2 gold medals at world championship events. And there was more money for taking second place in the darts championships than there was for in one time. But also, the average good Premier League player makes more than that in 2 weeks. So there you go. Running is not the sport you do to get rich. It's a sport you do because it's awesome.
It's awesome.
That's it.
And you're awesome, too.
Especially if you stuck around this long listening to all of our rambling on this episode. We always appreciate those of you who stick around, which is why we like to end by saying thank you, as well as a reminder that we want to hear your questions, and those are the things we like best about doing this stuff. So email us questions@a2zrunning.com.
Thank you all for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.